This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Alberto Gonzalez has submitted his resignation as Attorney General of the United States. We'll hear from him in just a moment. Almost since taking that position 2 years ago, the word beleaguered has been attached to his name. Of late, many Democrats and some Republicans in Congress have openly questioned the Attorney General's truthfulness in sworn testimony, both about the controversial dismissal of 8 United States attorneys and about his actions as White House counsel in seeking authorization of warrantless wiretaps. Alberto Gonzalez, a longtime associate of President Bush who appointed him to the Texas Supreme Court when he was governor. There was considerable speculation earlier in the Bush administration that he was being groomed for an appointment to the United States Supreme Court. Throughout his recent political troubles, the president insisted he would not ask the attorney general to step down, that any decision to resign would be up to him. Earlier this month, when Deputy White House Chief of Staff Karl Rove announced his intention to resign, we'd heard that administration appointees had been told if they wanted to leave, they should do so before Labor Day or expect to remain to the end of President Bush's second term. The president himself is expected to make a statement later this morning from Crawford, Texas, where we may be able to get news, the first news, on a possible replacement for Alberto Gonzalez as Attorney General. Alberto Gonzalez, the first Hispanic named to serve as the United States Attorney General, and again, that was part of the reason we thought he might be named to the Supreme Court later in the term. We're expecting him to appear at a Justice Department news conference. It's being described as a news conference, unclear as yet as to whether the Attorney General will be taking any questions from reporters who are gathered there. Alberto Gonzalez, of course, replaced John Ashcroft, the former senator from Missouri, who was the first Attorney General in the president's term and served, appointed in 2005, confirmed by the Senate, and has now served 2 years in that capacity. 2 years where a lot of his critics say the morale at the Justice Department has suffered greatly as a result of his the accusations are putting politics often ahead of policy, and that has caused some problems in the Justice Department. We've heard just a couple of moments ago to expect the news conference to begin in a couple of minutes. As yet, Attorney General has not appeared at the lectern at the Justice Department, though we're hearing the rattling of cameras, which suggests that he's just appearing on the stage and
Good
getting
morning.
Ready to speak to reporters.
Ago, I entered public service to make a positive difference in the lives of others. And during this time, I have traveled a remarkable journey from my home state of Texas to Washington, D.C., supported by the unwavering love and encouragement of my wife, Rebecca, and our sons, Jared, Graham, and Gabriel. Yesterday, I met with President Bush and informed him of my decision to conclude my government service as Attorney General of the United States, effective as of September 17, 2007. Let me say that it has been one of my greatest privileges to lead the Department of Justice. I have great admiration and respect for the men and women who work here. I have made a point as Attorney General to personally meet as many of them as possible, and today I want to again thank them for their service to our nation. It is through their continued work that our country and our communities remain safe, that the rights and civil liberties of our citizens are protected, and the hopes and dreams of all of our children are secured. I often remind our fellow citizens that we live in the greatest country in the world, and that I have lived the American dream. Even my worst days as Attorney General have been better than my father's best days. Public service is honorable and noble, and I am profoundly grateful to President Bush for his friendship and for the many opportunities he has given me to serve the American people. Thank you, and God bless America.
Why are you leaving? Why are you leaving, Attorney General? Why not? Why don't you deny your resignation on Sunday to the New York Times?
A brief statement from Alberto Gonzalez announcing his intention to resign as Attorney General of the United States effective on the 17th of September. You're listening to live coverage from NPR News. And as we expected, Attorney General Gonzalez not willing to take questions from reporters. With me here in the studio in Washington are Ron Elving, our senior Washington editor, and Jeffrey Rosen, a professor of law at the George Washington University and legal affairs editor of the New Republic. And thanks to you both for coming in. And Ron Elving, the Democrats certainly in the Senate Judiciary Committee, and indeed some Republicans, including the ranking member on that committee, Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, calling for Alberto Gonzalez's departure now for some time.
Yes, and those who had not outright called for him to resign had certainly suggested it would be best for the administration, for the Department of Justice, if he did so. There were really only a handful of upfront supporters saying that they really wanted Alberto Gonzalez to stay, say John Cornyn, the senator from Texas, who has been a defender right along and, of course, had known him for a number of years. But apart from that, there had been a general pulling back, if you will, a desertion on the part of the Republicans on the committee and more generally in the Senate.
Jeffrey Rosen, this has been among the more controversial terms as Attorney General, certainly in recent years.
It has indeed been. And when you try to think of Alberto Gonzalez's legacy, surely it will be associated with this aggressive theory of executive power. Gonzalez, along with people in the White House like David Addington, the Vice President's Chief of Staff, were among the most fierce proponents of the view that the president could basically do whatever he thought necessary in the war on terror without constraint by Congress or the courts. So from issues like surveillance to military commissions to coercive interrogations, Gonzalez got the most heat for basically asserting this broad power, and it was the same theory that got him into so much trouble in the theory over the fired U.S. attorneys, because there, too, he said the president's unitary authority over the whole executive branch allowed him to fire people purely for political disagreement, and some people thought that that really challenged the standards of nonpartisanship of the department.
There was also the issue of warrantless wiretaps. Again, this goes back to his time as White House counsel, which led to the bizarre scene that we heard described in testimony to Congress from, Alberto Gonzalez's former colleague at the Justice Department, James Comey.
It was a remarkable scene at that hospital where John Ashcroft is ill. He's made James Comey the deputy attorney general, the acting attorney general, and Gonzalez actually comes into the hotel room with Andrew Carr, the White House chief of staff.
Into the hospital,
and asks Ashcroft to reauthorize this terrorist surveillance program, according to Robert Mueller's notes, over Ashcroft's objections. And Ashcroft pulls himself up, and he says he won't do it. He has concerns about the program. He's not sure he has enough information, and he's not the attorney general anyway. Comey is, and Gonzalez leaves without the authorization that he wants. Many people thought the entire government was going to melt down because Comey and others were ready to resign if Gonzalez and the president authorized the program over their objections. But at the last minute, unexpectedly, the next day, President Bush agreed to make some legal changes to the program, and it continued. But of course, that program has been the source of his greatest problems before Congress, because Gonzalez denied that the program under discussion was, in fact, the terrorist surveillance program. Robert Mueller said that it was. Some congressmen thought that he'd perjured himself, and one impetus for his resignation right now might have been to lessen the heat in the hearings that are sure to follow.
And I wanted to ask you about that, Ron Elving, and that is, there were the chairman and the ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee basically told Alberto Gonzalez the last time he appeared before them, we don't believe you're telling us the truth.
No, they said it almost in so many words. They said your credibility is essentially absent. We cannot believe you. They said this in such pointed terms, I think, because they were really trying to send a signal to Alberto Gonzalez's boss, George W. Bush, that this had reached a point where it was no longer about the president's preference, which is clearly to keep Alberto Gonzalez in place. It was no longer about any of the people involved. It had escalated to an institutional confrontation of the kind that we have rarely had in our system, which is one of the strengths of our system, is that these confrontations are avoided. Individual people have, over the years, stepped aside when their own personal case has forced the institutions into confrontation. And that's the reason we've only had one cabinet member impeached in the entire history of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Joining us now, we mentioned the case of the eight fired U.S. attorneys. Joining us now from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is David Iglesias, who served in New Mexico from October 2001 to February 2007 as a United States attorney. And Mr. Iglesias, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And I know you were awakened to hear the news that Alberto Gonzalez intended to resign this morning. I wonder what went through your mind.
Well, I was surprised. I really thought he would stay in through the rest of the administration and help turn off the lights. So I was surprised that he chose to leave now.
And the effect that, this case has had certainly has contributed to his political difficulties in Washington, D.C.
Well, that's correct. I mean, it was a perfect storm for him in terms of there being numerous factors that kind of hit him at the same time, one of which was being my firing and the firing of my seven colleagues.
And the implication, which also went along with other suspicions about what was going on at the Justice Department, certainly suspicions by Democrats anyway, that this was excessively politicized.
Right, which is what I've been maintaining all along. I mean, they didn't tell the truth about the real nature behind our firings. I mean, they should have just said from day one, these are political people, we have political reasons, and we're not going to tell you why because we don't have to tell you why. But instead, they misrepresented under oath and said we had performance problems.
And that is what annoyed you and several of your colleagues, I think all of your colleagues.
Correct.
The implications, though, were that you were fired for failing to pursue Democrats as vigorously as the White House might have wanted you to, and for pursuing Republicans too vigorously.
Right. I mean, that's generally true for all of us. And in my case also, in the case of John McKay in Seattle and Todd Graves in Missouri, that we didn't file voter fraud prosecutions where the evidence didn't merit those prosecutions.
Voter fraud prosecutions against Democrats?
Against Democrat-based organizations, correct.
And as Alberto Gonzalez now winds up his tenure as Attorney General, what do you think his legacy is going to be?
Well, his legacy is this absolutely underscores the importance of having a U.S. Attorney General that understands that his primary fealty is to the Constitution and to the rule of law, not to the president.
And that was not the case, do you think, in the past?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I remember him telling us at a U.S. Attorney's conference 2 years ago that we work for the president. And we looked around the room and said, no, we work for the people. We're law enforcement officers. You know, we're not political operatives.
Do you think it might have the odd effect of preserving the jobs of United States attorneys in the future, people who, well, may have performance problems?
I think possibly. Any future administration would be crazy to push out U.S. attorneys for clearly political reasons. I mean, the only legitimate reasons are performance reasons or misconduct reasons.
And barring smoking guns at this point, those would be difficult to justify to the public.
That's correct.
David Iglesias, at this point, what's your future?
Well, I'm working on a book about this scandal, and I'm working on some other projects. I'm keeping very busy, actually. But, I mean, I see this as a vindication of the rule of law, and I hope the next U.S. Attorney General understands what his role is and understands. Sometimes he has to tell the president, no, you can't do that, Mr. President.
David Iglesias, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate your time this morning.
You're very welcome.
David Iglesias, among the attorneys, U.S. attorneys, fired by Alberto Gonzalez when he was the attorney general. He will remain in that position until the 17th of September. If you're just joining us, Alberto Gonzalez announcing his resignation this morning. I'm Neil Conan. With me here in the studio in Washington, D.C. are Ron Elving, senior Washington editor for National Public Radio, and Jeffrey Rosen, professor of law at George Washington University. And Jeffrey, let me just turn to you and some of the things that David Iglesias was saying about, bitterly criticizing what he clearly thought was beyond the rule of law.
It was a very interesting suggestion that David Iglesias made, that the main duty of the Attorney General is to the rule of law, not to the president. And that is indeed one model of the Attorney General, the nonpartisan enforcer of the rule of law. We think of people like Ed Levy, who is President Ford's Attorney General, as the most prominent example of that kind of AG. But it isn't the only model, and there are familiar other ones. Another familiar category is the political crony, the partisan, Robert Kennedy, the JFK's brother, was obviously in that model. John Mitchell, certainly, a political operative who was responsible for Nixon, and Gonzalez, very much in this category. And then there's a third one, which you might call the political ally or the ideological ally. Ashcroft was in that model, and Janet Reno was for Clinton. Those ideological allies often do say no to the president. Reno appointed special prosecutors. Ashcroft clashed with Bush because Bush thought he wasn't loyal enough and viewed things too in terms of his own political future. And that's one reason he was replaced with Gonzalez. But David Iglesias' suggestion is surely right when he indicates that Gonzalez pushed the model of the partisan or the crony attorney general, perhaps arguably at least, further than other people in that model had gone by insisting that U.S. attorneys could be fired purely because they disagreed with the president's agenda. He challenged the countervailing traditions and in that sense got into an awful lot of trouble.
Here are a couple of comments from congressional Republicans. Roy Blunt, the House Republican whip, Roy Blunt of Missouri. The life of Alberto Gonzalez has been defined by his devotion to family and deep commitment to public service. I appreciate his hard work in defense of our country and look forward to his future contributions. And now this from Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. I thank Alberto Gonzalez for his public service and wish him well in his future endeavors. It is my hope that whomever President Bush selects as the next Attorney General, he or she is not subjected to the same poisonous partisanship that we've sadly grown accustomed to over the past 8 months. Well, more on that in just a minute, but let's bring in Daniel Metcalf now. He spent 36 years at the Justice Department, first as an intern in 1971, retired last January as a senior attorney at the department. He's now an American University law professor and executive director of the Center on Government Secrecy, and he joins us from his office in Washington, D.C. And Mr. Metcalf, very good of you to be with us this morning.
Pleased to be here. Good morning.
And for you, does the Attorney General's resignation come as welcome news?
Well, it comes as welcome news, really overdue news, I think it's fair to say. There have been many of us former justice employees who have been saying for months and months that the time was long overdue for the Attorney General to resign because he'd reached such a point in which he was causing tremendous damage to the department. And it's important to have that damage repaired as quickly as possible. I go back to the Watergate times when, after the Saturday Night Massacre, I was there as a law clerk my first year of law school. I saw the tremendous damage to the department and the need for repair in 1973 and 1974. And I think it's time to have a Watergate-style repair, to have a new attorney general who can restore credibility to the department as quickly as possible.
So you think this is on the same level with the problems that the Justice Department suffered so grievously when it turned out that indeed the attorney general at the time would go to prison for his involvement in that affair?
I do indeed. I have to say that at the time that I retired from the department in January of this year, I was asked whether I thought morale at that point was worse than under Watergate, and I had to candidly say no, not quite. But certainly with everything that happened after I retired, starting in January of this year, and reaching a low point of Gonzalez's testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee in July, which was absolutely abominable and almost unbelievably lame, I certainly do think that the morale of the department reached a point that was lower than it was when I was there as a young law student in 73 and 74. And I must say that I think it's important now to look ahead to see who the next attorney general will be. What I recall of when I was there in 74 is that a senator, a member of the club, so to speak, was appointed because he was so easily confirmed, and that was Senator Saxby, who, believe it or not, was famous at the time for having opined that President Nixon's position on Watergate was much akin to that of the piano player in the lobby of a bordello who claimed that he did not know what was going on in the rooms upstairs. Nevertheless, Saxby was named Attorney General and confirmed in 1974. Nixon was desperate enough that he had to go that way. Now it's an open question as to who the next Attorney General will be. I just hope it's someone who can restore the department's respectability at a very basic level as quickly as possible.
We've heard some names at least floated around. The current Secretary of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff. We've heard the name of Paul Clement, the Solicitor General. And it's been an open secret here in Washington, D.C. that Orrin Hatcher, the senator, Republican senator from Utah, might not be averse to taking the position if nominated.
Well, I'll tell you, the first point of speculation probably centered until a few moments ago on whether there might possibly even be a recess appointment. You know, under current law, President Bush could have appointed someone for virtually the end of his tenure as president until Congress came back, the new Congress came back in January of 2009. And it was suspected that perhaps the timing of this, with a few days remaining before Congress returns from its recess after Labor Day, was connected to that. But if I understand correctly, and please tell me if I'm wrong, Gonzalez did say that he was resigning effective September 17th.
Correct.
That, I believe, would rule out a recess appointment, and that would mean that it would be someone who would have to go through a confirmation process. I have to question, based upon what my friends at the Department of Homeland Security tell me, and I still have many of them there, as to whether how easily Mr. Chertoff might fare or might go through a confirmation process. I know that his position might be easily backfilled, so to speak, with someone else the president has in mind for DHS, but I don't see Mr. Chertoff as anything even approaching what Senator Saxby was in 1974, and certainly not Ed Leavy thereafter when Ford became president and resigned.
Hmm. Well, Daniel Metcalf, thanks very much. Just before you leave us, what qualities should the next attorney general bring to the job?
Well, I would say quality number one would have to be personal integrity, because that was what was so much lacking, so manifestly lacking in Attorney General Gonzales. Anyone who professed such a lack of memory and accountability and just basic competence needs to be followed by someone who stands as a symbol of rectitude. Some people have suggested, by the way, that someone who meets the bill for that would be former Senator John Danforth, who I believe is an Episcopal minister and
Correct.
Certainly is a former member of the club. He perhaps does not have the advantage that Senator Hatch does, being a current member of the club, so to speak, but that's a possibility. Senator Hatch, I will candidly tell you, in my own estimation, has spent so much of his own political capital in defense of Attorney General Gonzales that I don't frankly see how he could hold the position or play the role of the anti-Gonzales in restoring credibility to the department so easily. Certainly he holds the advantage to the White House in that he could be readily confirmed, just as Senator Saxby was in 1974. But if it were a choice between the two of them, Danforth and Hatch, I think it would be better for the department to begin restoring its luster and repairing the damage to have someone like Senator Danforth there instead.
Daniel Metcalf, thanks very much for your time today.
You're quite welcome.
Daniel Metcalf, a former attorney at the Justice Department, now at American University law professor and director of the Center on Government Secrecy, who served, I believe, under more than a dozen attorneys general throughout his time. Still with me here in the studio are Ron Elving, senior Washington editor for NPR, and Jeffrey Rosen of the George Washington University and the New Republic. And Jeffrey, when we hear people like Daniel Metcalf say personal integrity shockingly lacking in the last attorney general, we should point out no allegation of wrongdoing at the Department of Justice has been proven. There has been nothing wrong. No charges are remaining. There's been no suggestion that Attorney General Gonzales in any sense enriched himself through any of this.
Certainly no suggestions of enrichment or quid pro quo corruption. But what makes Gonzales so fascinating and maddening for his critics is that he seemed to go up to the line of vague criminal laws without clearly crossing them by suggesting, for example, that an attorney general could be fired purely because he wanted to investigate one of the president's allies. That would be a Watergate-style cover-up. And some people suggested that certain attorney generals came close to that line. But as you say, they couldn't prove it on him. They didn't actually have the facts. Similarly, there were suggestions that he ignored the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act's clear commands and tried to circumvent it. But that, too, was vague. And then this allegation of perjury, the usual last refuge of Washington scandals, where also he seemed to have a legalistic defense. So surely the Democrats were chomping at the bit to actually prove some kind of actual allegation of wrongdoing. And one challenge for the next AG, because many of these investigations will come up to the edge of alleging the violation of criminal laws, perhaps involving torture, FISA, all of these things. If I were President Bush, I wouldn't want an AG who was absolutely in the Ed Leavy model. I'd want to sense that he had some loyalty to me, because the vulnerability, the legal exposure is going to be very profound. So mixing these two models, having someone absolutely of unquestioned integrity, but also someone who's has the president's interest in mind, will surely be at the top of his list. And that's why someone like Chertoff might well be appealing. Harry Reid, the Democratic Majority Leader, I gather, has already expressed doubts about Chertoff. Chertoff would also raise all of the privacy debates that Gonzales did as well. But definitely an interesting possibility.
And I wanted to ask Ron Elving about that. Certainly Alberto Gonzales, in addition to his controversies as Attorney General, author or architect of the so-called torture memo, clearly one of the intellectual fathers of Guantanamo Bay. This is another part of the legacy that he will leave behind.
Yes, and as Jeffrey observed earlier, this is really a case of somebody who was behind the coercive interrogation, who is behind every one of these controversial decisions, and in a highly aggressive way. So he was doing what the White House wanted him to do. He was also pushing and pulling the White House to do the things they sort of wanted to do. He was giving them legal explanations and justifications to take these various avenues. Now, when Daniel Metcalf used the phrase personal integrity, I do think a lot of people start to think about money. They start to think, was he stealing? I don't think there's any allegation of that. The personal integrity issue here, as I think Daniel made clear, was the way he testified in July to the Judiciary Committee, the way he treated them, the way he clearly was not going to, in any sense, come clean, in any sense, give them the real story. That kind of defiance of Congress amounts to executive aggrandizement. It amounts to a usurpation of the separation of powers. And for him to just act as though he simply had no recollection, that's a lack of personal integrity.
And again, we're expecting a statement from President Bush later this morning. He's still at his ranch in Texas, and we may at that point get some indication as to who the president thinks might be an appropriate replacement for Alberto Gonzalez. Of course, as we mentioned, given that timing, he's going to have to go back get confirmed by the Senate Judiciary Committee first and then by the United States Senate. And Ron Elving, a lot of these questions are going to be coming up no matter who is in that chair.
I don't think there's any question but that Pat Leahy, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, is going to pursue these subpoenas. He's going to try to find out who gave orders from the White House for some of these things to happen, because the Judiciary Committee is convinced that's where the orders came from.
If you joined us late, we heard earlier, just about half an hour ago, that Alberto Gonzalez, the Attorney General of the United States, had submitted his resignation in a conversation yesterday with President Bush in Texas. We're going to hear exactly what he had to say. This, again, from just about half an hour ago, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez.
Good morning. 13 years ago, I entered public service to make a positive difference in the lives of others. And during this time, I have traveled a remarkable journey from my home state of Texas to Washington, D.C., supported by the unwavering love and encouragement of my wife, Rebecca, and our sons, Jared, Graham, and Gabriel. Yesterday, I met with President Bush and informed him of my decision to conclude my government service as Attorney General of the United States, effective as of September 17, 2007. Let me say that it has been one of my greatest privileges to lead the Department of Justice. I have great admiration and respect for the men and women who work here. I have made a point as Attorney General to personally meet as many of them as possible. And today I want to again thank them for their service to our nation. It is through their continued work that our country and our communities remain safe, that the rights and civil liberties of our citizens are protected, and the hopes and dreams of all of our children are secured. I often remind our fellow citizens that we live in the greatest country in the world, and that I have lived the American dream. Even my worst days as Attorney General have been better than my father's best days. Public service is honorable and noble, and I am profoundly grateful to President Bush for his friendship and for the many opportunities he has given me to serve the American people. Thank you, and God bless America.
Alberto Gonzalez speaking just about half an hour ago. He took no questions from reporters. Our thanks to Ron Elving, senior Washington editor at National Public Radio, and to Jeffrey Rosen, professor of law at the George Washington University, legal affairs editor of The New Republic, his most recent book, The Supreme Court, The Personalities and Rivalries That Defined America. Stay tuned to National Public Radio for further news on these developments as they continue throughout the day. As we mentioned earlier, President Bush is expected to make a statement about the resignation of his friend, Alberto Gonzalez, a man with whom he's been politically associated since his days as governor of Texas, where Alberto Gonzalez served him as his counselor and was later appointed to the Texas Supreme Court and followed President Bush to Washington, D.C. More about the legacy of Alberto Gonzalez and the future, perhaps the next nominee to head up the Justice Department, later today on NPR News. Our thanks to you listening. I'm Neil Conan. This is NPR News in Washington.